Wally, this is clearly sound advice, and everybody here is on board with you not trying to close the door or trying to land on the remaining runway. But clearly it's hard to actually follow, because when it happened to you in a glider, your first instinct, even though you knew better, was to try to close the canopy. So how do you expect people to actually follow this advice, or how do you retrain or resist these bad instincts to try to shut the door?
Well, it's not easy, as I pointed out. It's just our natural reaction, and I think the only way we can be prepared for it is to understand that it is the reaction we're going to have, and to brief the takeoff, to try to brief the scenarios mentally or verbally, to remind ourselves that even though it's the natural reaction, we have to resist it. And you just need to be aware of it. You need to be thinking of it. And in the case of the gliders, frequently the canopy comes open on the takeoff roll when you just get a little airspeed. And so that's part of a glider takeoff briefing. And of course, in our airplanes, depending on the make and model, sometimes an open canopy can be serious, and sometimes it's just a little annoyance. So that's why I mentioned in my response that you need to be aware of the procedures in your specific airplanes and be aware that you're going to tend to overreact, and that you try to resist that. And the main job is to control the airplane.
Yeah, I suppose you had that first reaction, but you were able to check it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
You didn't continue to try to close the canopy.
Right. We gave up on that pretty quick. And fortunately, we did it in time to get back in position.
David, you were telling us you had a similar situation. Can you tell us about that?
So when I was a fire bomber pilot, we were doing spring training. I was in the air tractor as a bomber, and they were training a new lead pilot in the Aerostar. While they were quite low level and making a run, the upper clamshell door, so basically the top half of the door, swung up. And check pilot ended up having to take control because the pilot forgot to fly the airplane, which was heading towards high ground, so he had to actually start a climb. But when they got sorted out with the check pilot flying from the right seat, the left seat pilot tried to close the door and quickly found it was completely impossible. So I would think the same scenario would be here. Like, closing the door is simply not possible, so don't even go there.
Now, the other thing that we often brief on takeoffs is that if something happens while there's still runway remaining, we'll use it. We'll land straight ahead. And that's an option here. It might result in an overrun, but it reminds me of the scenario we did last month where we had an option to continue straight ahead that would probably result in an overrun, or take the unknown and continue, try and take the problem airborne. And in that case, everybody aborted. In this case, nobody's aborting. Well, let me go to you, JP, because that was your scenario as the featured expert there. Why is the calculation different on this one?
I think you're looking at a situation where you actually have an airplane that is going to fly, not a maybe is it going to fly. I think the situation here, because I've had numerous doors, I think all of us have, pop open. Never a gullwing door. That's a little bit more significant than a regular door that you'd have in a Piper or maybe a Beechcraft product. But keeping it as normal as possible and just flying the airplane and not letting this disrupt things so much that you end up breaking things more than they end up broken, or even crashing the airplane. So I think the big difference between the two, I think you're not dealing with a climb performance or a performance issue here. You're dealing with something that's an abnormal. And I've always been taught, if you have an emergency, don't create another emergency that's perhaps even worse than the original emergency.
Yeah, and the thing that's not typical here versus the usual door popped open is that these doors can and have broken off. They can hit the tail, and that's where the catastrophic outcome, besides pilot distraction and loss of control, could be. Tom?
I agree with JP that the difference between this and the prior scenario is the fact that this airplane has flying speed. It's already up in the air, and there's not an imminent risk of loss of control because of a pilot attempting to make something fly that isn't ready to fly. That's a difference. One of the other considerations here is that this scenario begins, well, the action items of the scenario begin at about 100 feet above ground level, which means And at that point, as I recall, the airplane was what? Had about 3,400 foot of runway left or 2,400. In any event,
yeah.
2,400. Yeah, that's right. And so this airplane's already 100 feet up. So a maximum performance landing from that position is going to take twice the book 50-foot landing speed, at least. And so there is no chance, really, that the pilot's even going to get the airplane. There's little chance that the pilot will even get the airplane down on the remaining runway from that height, and a virtual certainty that it's going to be at a fairly high speed when it goes off the end of the runway if he tried. So this is a situation where I think the airplane is flying. We don't have any control issue, at least not yet. Try to fly it as normally as possible.
John.
Yeah, so my choice was two with the asterisk. And basically, it's to fly the airplane. But as soon as you can, as soon as you get to pattern altitude or some level, then you want to slow down to reduce the air load. So it's a little bit of a hybrid. But I think one of the keys to this is knowing the airplane and knowing different checklists or different procedures. I fly a gullwing airplane also, and I'm hyper aware of this. Two of my neighbors have RV-10s. I've flown in them. One of them has even installed a micro switch, a door ajar switch, that if the latch isn't completely secured, they get a red light on the panel. But one of the things that I find interesting is the difference in some of the techniques. I've had it a clamshell door open in a caravan, which is the aft air stair door, the upper air stair. And in a caravan, the checklist item is to slow down, but it's also to deploy 10 degrees of flaps, because the high wing airplane, the flaps are right in front of the door, so it blocks some of the airflow. So what works in one airplane doesn't work in another, and that's why you really need to know your procedure for that.
Okay, so we've committed to taking this problem into the air. Everybody is doing things basically as normal from there, possibly slowing down when you get to pattern altitude, except Catherine, you're going to shortcut it, get on the ground sooner on runway 5. Little bit of a tailwind component, but it's only a 5-knot wind. Tell me about that decision.
Yeah, so I'm probably a 3/1 with an asterisk. So I've had many doors open in flight, and they're not a big deal. It's really the noise that you notice. In my Cessna, you can easily close the door. In my Piper, you absolutely could not, despite the checklist that the POH had. Anyway, it's just typically it's an annoyance. This is not that. This is a gullwing door that is flapping in the breeze, and I can't imagine that it's not affecting the flying characteristics of this airplane in a noticeable way. So I will say that, it's unfortunate that the pilot chose an intersection takeoff, because were I in the situation where I used all the runway, I would have absolutely chopped the power and landed on the remaining runway. That option is not as attractive right now. I think I'd choose to get it on the ground sooner. I like, the idea of keeping it as normal as possible and bringing it around for a landing. But I think I'm going to go for 5. I want this airplane on the ground sooner than it would be landing on 2-8.
Go for runway 5 rather than, not option 5.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I would go for runway 5.
Just to be clear. Yeah. My impression was that the flapping door would actually help. Right? I mean, that's what the birds do.
Yeah, I doubt very much they put this airplane in a wind tunnel with that door in the breeze. So I imagine that would be quite a shocker.
So you mentioned full length. Let's back up here. Show of hands and be honest. It's a much more convenient taxi to take that intersection. And you still have a 4,000-foot runway, way more than enough. How many here would have taken the intersection departure? Okay, we got two yeses to that, Wally and David. Let me give it to you, Wally. Tell me about why wouldn't you use the full length here?
I just know in real life, plenty of runway for this airplane, and it would have been my decision to use the intersection, clearly.
Yeah, and same with you, David.
Yeah, I have to be honest here. I make a point of trying to use all the runway, but I can imagine sitting there boiling in the cockpit There's probably a whole lineup of training airplanes at the end of the runway. I got to be honest, you know, I'm going to say I want to get in the air.
Yeah, and it is actually, if you look at the airport diagram here, it's an annoying taxi to get to 28. Mm-hmm. It's a few extra turns, a runway crossing, probably waiting behind flight school aircraft.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Catherine.
Yeah, my home airport does not have the luxury of a parallel taxiway. So every time I take off, I've got a back taxi. So it might be that experience of mine. But anytime I'm tempted to do an intersection takeoff, I ask myself the question, what's your life worth? And it is definitely worth the extra minute it's going to take to back taxi or an inconvenient taxi.
And Tom, you were shaking your head no to the intersection departure. Is that a hard and fast rule, no intersection departures, or what does it boil down to?
There's one exception, and yes, I do accept it in this one situation at Wichita Eisenhower Airport. When you're on the east runway, they always want piston airplanes to depart at an intersection, and I follow along with that. But anywhere else I go, I always go full length. I can honestly say when I'm out traveling cross countries and things like that, when I'm given the option by a tower or on my own of an intersection, I've declined it and gone full length.
So if we back this up then, those of you who did take the full length, now instead of 2,500 feet of runway remaining, we'll say we've got 4,000 feet or so. Catherine, you said you would probably land straight ahead there. Is that something that you brief on every takeoff when you would still have runway remaining to land straight ahead? And how do you figure out? Because that runway, you know, I think pilots often don't realize how quickly you are actually out of runway to land straight ahead.
Right. You know, part of my brief involves looking at a satellite image. And if you look at the satellite image, you know, you do have a bit of an overrun and that goes into a field. I mean, sure, that might not be pretty, but, I think that's a better option than staying in the air. So if I had taken off full length, I absolutely would have put this plane back down on the runway, even if I ended up running off the end.
Yeah. And often that briefing point comes in the context of an engine failure where, you know, of course you're going to land straight ahead because it's all you can do from that altitude. And if there's runway to use, all the better, but it doesn't matter a whole lot at that point. John.
We did a scenario on this, I don't know, 2 years ago or so, that actual rejected takeoff training. And the takeaway from that was really how difficult it, most people don't actually practice that. But if you, even on a long runway, 6,000-7,000 foot runway, you climb up to 150, 200 feet, pull the power to simulate an engine failure, and push it over, it takes a lot of runway to stop. And it takes a lot of push to get the nose back down. This RV-10 was a 300 horsepower engine, you know, is climbing like the proverbial bat out of hell. And to push it over and come back down is going to take a lot of runway. And that's something that you really would need to brief well in advance.
David.
The flying school where I help out, a Cessna 172 was destroyed in this maneuver. They VX takeoff, and at about 150 feet on a long runway, the instructor pulled the throttle back and they didn't get the nose down far enough. And it hit so hard that the fuel and the wing tanks actually deformed the bottom of the wing. The landing gear was about a foot wider and the nose gear was driven into the firewall. So yeah, I want to double that. And I think the other important thing here is startle factor. Right, you can't say door opens, start the landing. You got to add the three full bananas before anything happens. And so there's 500 feet of runway that disappeared. So I think that's definitely an option, but I think you also have to be honest and to allow for the reaction as well.
Is that something that you would practice then, David? Obviously, with prior coordination between pilots and maybe not from VX at 100 feet, but is there a safe way to practice that? For real?
At altitude. Sure. I do this scenario at altitude to make the point about how much you have to push the nose over and how quickly the airspeed goes away. And so basically what happened is they didn't get the nose down and the airspeed never came up and they had no energy to flare. And so the airplane, we figure, hit with about 1,000 feet per minute down.
So this discussion so far has been mostly about this RV with the gull wing door, but most people, the scenario that they can relate to is a more typical you know, a Piper or a Cessna door or a Beach door. And that's, pilots still crash when that happens. And I know that, Tom, you can speak to that because you have before. Why in Bonanzas, for example, why do pilots still crash when the door pops open by 2 or 3 inches?
It's a distraction event. It is very, very noisy, especially if you have a passenger. The forward cabin door on the Beach airplanes is on the right-hand side for whatever reason, whatever rationale lost to history. They put it on that side of the aircraft. And if you have a passenger over there, if they're wearing a headset, the wind is going to just about exactly hit the boom mic, and it gets very, very noisy, very fast in the airplane. As a matter of fact, one of the things we teach in the American Bonanza Society program is reach over there and yank their headset jacks out of the panel to quiet things down for you. But it's a distraction event. In any given year, there will be 2 or 3 gear-up landings that we have enough detail from the report that tells us that the cabin door was open first, and then the pilot neglects to extend the landing gear. And I can presume that the distraction is part of the gear up landing. About once every 18 months or so, we read a case of a fatal loss of control where the pilot had either reported the door was open and then lost control of the airplane before landing, or the pattern of injury to the pilot as found by investigators suggests that the pilot was attempting to close the door. In other words, the crush injuries are on the pilot's left side. They're reaching across to the right side of the airplane to try to handle the door instead of flying the airplane when it hits. But I think it's entirely distraction. The only time I was ever deposed as an expert witness was in the case of an open door in a Bonanza. And the circumstances were just a little bit different, but it was a loss of control scenario as well.
Actually, Tom covered pretty much what I was going to talk about, the panic that can happen to a passenger and how disconcerting it can be. I remember one flight with my daughter in a Mooney, and the door popped open, and you know, she was screaming, "I'm going to fall out. I'm going to..." No, it's okay, honey. We're just going to come back around and land. And, you know, that might be worth in the briefing to make sure that the passenger knows how to work the door. Bonanza doors are notoriously difficult for getting latched correctly. The Cherokee is with the latch on top. And the need to make sure that they understand exactly how to do that, both for egress and exit. So, passenger brief is important.
Yeah, passengers tend to not like open doors.
Right.
But even in the doors that are easy to close, like, you know, I think about flying flight school 152s, easy to close, but they pop open all the time.
Yeah. And it's
no
big deal.
I think passengers appreciate being told this, you know, your door may pop open. I promise it's not a problem.
Right.
Yeah. The relevant experience that most non-pilots have is, airline movies where a door or a window pops open, they get sucked out. So, yeah, they know that's going to happen.
Wally.
I just wanted to share an experience I had that goes along with what Catherine said earlier regarding the Piper doors. I was flying a Lance and didn't get the door latched properly. Shortly, just at liftoff, the door popped open. And I was feeling quite smug about that because I knew that Piper had a published procedure to close that door. So I thought, oh, this is not going to be a problem. I'm just going to continue and I'll get this door closed. I climbed to about 1,000 feet, departed the pattern, and then began to try to follow that procedure. And after almost spinning the airplane 2 or 3 times, I realized that I was not going to get that door closed. And just like pretty much everything else, every other airplane, I wound up going back to the airport, landing, closing the door, and then making a safe takeoff.
Catherine.
Yeah, I had to chuckle at Wally's experience because I used to have a Piper Cherokee, and multiple times I didn't get the upper latch closed right. So, you know, it's really loud, and then you get to altitude, and if you look at the procedure, it involves putting the airplane in a slip so that you can try to get that door closed. And here I am in the biggest monster slip I can get this plane into, trying to get the door latch, and I still couldn't do it. So my hat's off to anyone who can close a Piper door up in the air. But yeah, the deal is to land and shut it on the ground.
I think Wally made a really good point about my two experiences at Baron and Cherokee with the door opening were both at rotation. And so I think that's a common scenario. That's kind of maybe a takeaway that I'm thinking of now briefing students. You know, if this is going to happen to you, that's probably when it's going to happen. And the other one, a bit of a funny story, Cessna 150 Discovery flight, you know, the first flight to introduce somebody. And we're chugging along and the door opens and the passenger starts screaming, like flat out screaming. And so all I do is open my door, get it out about half an inch, and then it sucks the passenger door closed. And then she stops screaming. And then we carry on. But it was like a switch. Scream, don't scream.
Tom.
Yeah, when one door opens, one door closes, another opens. Yeah, okay, great. The scenario is so common, as several have said here, in the beach products that in which I teach, and Wally is one of our accredited instructors, knows this as well, that that's a required task to present in the initial training that the American Bonanza Society provides. And we teach the instructors that we accredit basically how to trip the door or how to set it up so that the door will trip. And it will happen almost right at rotation speed, right at liftoff speed. But I mentioned earlier that I'd been deposed once and I was dismissed from the case when the plaintiff learned that I had presented this scenario basically every Friday for 5 years when I was teaching at Flight Safety International, because the assertion was that the airplane would be uncontrollable with the door open in flight. And that can't be farther from the truth, at least in, it sounds like, most type certificated airplanes. I don't know about an RV with a gull wing door up there interfering with the slipstream. I don't know. But the fact that, even though it's not factory approved, the fact that there in the resources is a checklist for flying the airplane with the door off the airplane suggests that perhaps it's not going to go wildly out of control when it pops open.
Yeah, as far as we could find, there weren't any accidents like that. There were a couple RV accidents that were pilot distraction and loss of control, as best could be determined. Wally?
Yeah, I have some statistics. This might be a good place to plug them in. I just did a little search on the NTSB website, and I found 17 accidents that were related to doors and opening. 12 of those were serious or fatal. That's a pretty bad statistic. And usually the results were they did a stall shortly after takeoff, or they stalled doing the turn back. Pretty interesting. One of them was a Piper, and the door popped open just at liftoff. The pilot decided to abort and went off the end of the runway down into a ditch and did substantial damage and injuries. So the record's not good with trying to fix the door.
Yeah, I had a door pop open on a Duchess once right before rotation on a 8,000 foot runway, so there's plenty of runway, and my instinct was just pull the throttles and stop. Didn't give any thought to anything else, and it makes me wonder what my instinct would have been if that had happened shortly after rotation with maybe not quite enough runway left, because it really was, I mean, and granted, this was a January day in Minnesota, so I didn't really even want to deal with a trip around the pattern with the door open, but I don't think I was thinking about that. I think it was just automatic throttle, yeah, Side and stop.
One other statistic I just want to add to that. Of those files, I saw no record in any of them of aircraft damage from departing doors or canopies. The causes were always stall spin.
Well, let's take this problem into the air again, and let's say the door does depart, which we know happens, hits the tail, you think it might have done some damage. Are you now in any more of a hurry to get on the ground? Or are you in less of a hurry? Do you want to leave the pattern even and do some controllability checks so you don't find out about it when you try to flare? Tom?
Yeah, I would think you'd want to slow down and get a little altitude and check to see what your safe final approach is going to be based on some controllability checks. We don't have anything in the Bonanza Baron world, but the military T-34s have the Navy had a controllability check that I've suggested as something we ought to adopt several times. I would be less inclined to want to get down in a hurry unless I had a noticeable immediate control issue. if it didn't feel like I've got a problem, now what I want to see is when it's going to be safe to fly final approach in this thing. I need to get up, get some altitude, and start slowing the airplane down basically in 5-knot increments and making sure that I still have good control, response, and authority. I'm not getting any buffet.
Yeah, I think for all the variations that we've talked about on doors opening here, you know, and there are some others that we didn't talk about. There's some Piper Twins that have had issues with baggage doors popping open and their contents going into the engine. I've seen video of Moonies losing baggage doors that hit the tail. There are these variations, and in some airplanes, it's just a minor distraction if you know to treat it that way. But kind of regardless, the first step is basically to do nothing, because the priority is always keeping control. And that's actually something that takes discipline and preparation, because as pilots, doing nothing can be deeply counterintuitive.